Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. To Jay Bird, what are you doing, my man?
Hey, Steve, how are you tonight?
I am cold.
Cold. I thought it never got below 70 degrees down south.
Never does. It is. I'll tell you, for anybody that's been out in the water, whether up where you guys are at or anywhere, it has been cold front city. Mm-hmm. It has been high skies and cold, chilly. You know, just grinding. Got a nice one today though.
But did you?
Got the rarest muskie there is, Jay.
Okay.
The 49.
An albino tiger strain?
The 49. The rarest of all rare, you know. There's 48s and there's 50s. There's no 49s. We got the rare old 49 today.
Oh, sweet. Oh, that's cool.
So, you know, it's one of these fish. Just grinded, man. It's cold and nasty. And, you know, you get this midday slight warm up and there's no wind and just nasty conditions, just slowing down. It's cool. The guy that's out fishing with me, he's a podcaster, and we're talking today about the, you know, stay and make it pay.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. Friggin' Meps giant killer.
Well, there you go.
As slow as humanly possible.
Just trickling that thing along, huh?
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
You add weight to it or anything? Did you modify it, or no. Did you just run it slow?
Low and slow. And, you know, you're talking these cold fronts, and I'll tell you, and I'm sure a lot of guys have been out fishing, and it's a different world. I talked to a guy this week. He's in the fishing Monona, and they had that same cold front, and there's not a lot of fish caught in a tournament. And, you know, all this stuff, you go, cold fronts
Monona
are tough.
Down in Madison?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But you go, there's cold fronts, and there's like the first sort of cold front that turns the temperatures to fall, right? And I feel like that's what we've just been through, is like the death blow to summer.
Yeah.
And it's worth noting, because that's a tough time, because you hear about the transitional periods, but often there is a hard demarcation line of boom. Here you go, boys. You know, it is late fall. It is not early fall. It is not, you know what I'm saying? Like, it felt like just getting smacked over the head, and you go, all right, welcome to winter. Welcome to early winter. And so,
happening right here, now. Yeah. It's a change of scenery by later this week. We got highs in the 40s. So,
right. And you're going to have these cold overnights. You know, a lot of times you look at, and it's October, and October is an interesting time, whether it be late September or early October. There's this Indian summer thing that happens where you have really warm days and really cold nights. Mm-hmm. And that's an awesome time, right? You know, there's going to be a lot of fish up shallow. They're going to follow that thermal refuge. They're going to do some stuff. But then just something comes and ruins the party. And that's been this frontal system. I think it's hit pretty much the whole habitat range, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And so you'll get that front that comes through and you go, oh, party's over. We really need to make adjustments. And a lot of that is adjustments in speed and in depth. You know, that fish today, we're not targeting that thing in deep water, but we're not targeting it in shallow water either, right? Sometimes turn around and don't fish the shallow edge. Fish that break that's away from the shallow edge. That's what we're able to do. And basically your boat's in the same place, but you're just thrown to the other side, you know? So giving that a look, this is an interesting time on all fronts, because I think that the bait fish, all the forage base and the muskies, I think there's a modicum of confusion. When you really get that hard transition, you know, there's never a year. I don't think there's a year on record where this is perfectly gradual thing, right? Monday, 65. Ooh. Tuesday, 64. Thursday, 63. Right,
it just never happens
no,
that way.
No, it is just like, boom, welcome to Thunderdome.
Yeah.
And so I'm just trying to identify it this week where you go, you know, there's been tough days. Tough days where you're going, you just go questioning your life decisions, and everybody's going through it. I've been there over the course of the last week.
No, right, because you've had several days in the water in a row where the fish are not superbly active.
Oh, nipping.
Right. I mean, short just striking. The direct opposite. So it's right. Just like, okay, how many days can this go on for?
It can't go on forever, but there's always that. And I really identified it in the last couple of days. It happens every year. There's just the Indian summer, for lack of a better term, where it's just perfect. And then you're on the backside of that. And you've got to look at that and you go, okay, it's going to be tough fishing. It's going to be a tough bite. What do I need to do? And, you know, slow down, focus on smaller areas, all the typical stuff when we're not dealing with a hot fish. But, you know, I think the whole habitat range has sort of been smacked, whether where you're at, as far as your seasonality, it has been an interesting front, you know, where you get just the high skies, and you guys have had high, bright skies and some pretty moving winds. All the way down here has been sort of flat with just superbly high skies. So, you know, downsizing is still a thing in the fall, because a lot of times these fish, you know, when we're talking 60 degree, 58 degree, 55 degree water temps, those fish, their metabolism is slowing way down.
Yeah, and that's exactly where our water temps are mm-hmm. going to right now, too. Same thing. And 55 to 60,
And what to keep in mind is that, you know, slow is relative. Slow in 70-degree water versus slow in 55 are two different things. You've got to make that assessment and go, what am I dealing with? And what I'm trying to just pound real quick on at the beginning of this thing is, if the temps are already slow and now it's a cold front on top of that, buddy, you better downsize and you better slow way down. Right? And be willing to do that and just sort of assess the situation and go, it's not summer anymore, boys. We're not in Kansas. And it's just like I said, I hate to be the party pooper, but the fun's over and the hard work's starting now.
The delivery system has to change up a little bit. You know, like, you know, the effectiveness of live suckers are in the northern region here is starting to really be a player. Mm-hmm. Jim, the tube screamer Stewart, and Timmy, the mayor Ives, went out today and snuck out for a few hours this morning and had a nice one on a sucker. They were casting, and it must have deked him in. He took the sucker, and Tim had him coming in, and it's like he got a 10 feet from the boat, noticing that he ate and hit the back end of the sucker, so he actually had no rig in his mouth, and he's right. Like, yep, there it goes, popped right off. But
I'll tell you, Jay,
40s, nice fish.
Yeah. But
they had to slow down. They were experiencing some turnover actually mm-hmm. on one of the bigger lakes around here. So, Jay, not horrible, but
I was gonna say there's fish that are on a sucker but don't have a hook in them. Right,
happens a lot.
You got to mm-hmm. shoot those.
You got.
Before, shoot them. You just.
I'll get the gun, Dave.
Just shoot those fish. Just get it over mm-hmm. with. You know, if you don't have a hook in them, just shoot
them. That's the way they used to do it, you know, back in the old
absolutely.
Days.
Kill a muskie, mm-hmm. you save a sucker. That's what I always say.
It's good to have your priorities straight, Steve.
Oh, you know. They're easier to net that way. That sucks, dude. When you get one,
I was looking at the bright side.
Yeah, you get one. It sucks that you get one hanging on to the tail or something. And you're like, oh man,
what are you gonna do?
He's not in. That's the thing, though. He's not gonna hold on. Like you're gonna, if you have him 3 feet from the boat, like you know, he's gonna let go. There's no way he's that dumb where he's like, I'm not letting go.
People occasionally do that. You know, they'll catch fish and mm-hmm. On a sucker and net it, and once it's in the net, they realize it's just like the rig was never in the fish.
Yeah,
he just didn't let go. You know, it's kind of cool.
Well,
weird things happen in the sucker season.
Well, and that's, again, give them 30 minutes to eat it, Jeff. Tease, do not do that.
No, do not do that.
These are old
quick
school.
Set. Yeah, right away.
Quick
set. Set rigs only.
Dude, back in the day, they're like, oh, I had a guy tell me a story. It's so funny. Don't do this, guys, because killing fish is stupid. But there's this guy, and he was a child. This guy's in his 70s, and he went fishing up in Minocqua area back in the day. Back in the day when I guess there was like a theme park where you could feed frogs to muskies. Right? You know what I'm talking about? Like, there was some, like...
It must be Wildwood.
Yeah,
like... Either that or the Aquabats or something. Sometimes the Aquabats feed the Muskies while they're doing their ski routine.
Children. They actually throw children to the Muskies. Go see them in Aquabats. Greatest show on earth. Now, so this guy's talking about they have this pond and you could huck, like, frogs or something. It's ridiculous. Like,
that's cool.
We're talking, like, 1945 here.
Sure.
Anyway...
Post-war Muskies.
Right. He post-war. The pre-war and post-war Muskies. That's Jay's book he's writing. It's like Martin Guitars, but it just for Muskie fishing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but it was so funny. He was just telling this story about his first Muskie. And he said, I'm out with a guy. And he said, it's like August, dude. And they're fishing suckers, which is ridiculous. And he said, the guy gets a hit. And he goes, there's a fish. And he says, what do I do? And he said, wait till I smoke 3 cigarettes.
So... Yes, I've heard these stories, maybe not that particular one, the time.
Yeah, it's like,
that's how they used to do it.
Yeah,
they'd use single hook, you know, what they used to call them, kill rigs.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you got to wait 20 minutes, you know, make sure the fish is turn, you know, or whatever, you know, they had a duration. It's just like, by that, the thing, you know, the thing's almost completely digested,
really.
To a fish. And at that point, it's just like, not a healthy situation, but, pretty good hooking percentage, I guess.
I would say it's going to be a high percentage if you give him, I don't know if he's a chain smoker, but that's long enough. With that being said, we should, you know, we get a lot of questions about hanging meat, and one thing with that deal, and you never know how they grab it. When rigging these things, though, I like to sort of make sure I've got as much coverage as I can, right? I sort of assume the headshot, but I like to have something down there towards the tail if I can get it.
Yeah,
you know,
it's very debatable. You know,
there's argument.
Yeah, the more metal on the sucker, the less it's more inhibited. You know, to move freely and all that.
If I can have 3 trebles, mm-hmm. I'm gonna have 3 trebles, just so you know, head, middle, mm-hmm. and tail. And for you guys that have never done it, with those quick strikes, a lot of times, man, knowing which way the fish is pointed is important. You know, and I've seen a lot of, and my bro Pete, man, and he's always had some good videos where it shows him doing this. It's sort of getting a little bit of pressure so you can feel which way he's going.
Right? Yeah, you want him to go away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Smitty's, you know, Smitty and Son are high-level experts at light bait fishing, mm-hmm. you know, with suckers, and they make some great rigs. Their nose rigs are intensely popular, mm-hmm. you know. Very simple rig to use. It's just like, you don't have to worry about rubber bands and all that stuff where you got a thread through the nostrils. It's like, nope, clipping on the nostril, and you got a couple reverse little Aberdeen hooks on each treble. Nick on each side, done.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in the water.
Wait for him to get the big 8.
Yeah, Smitty and his son Jake, they get awful excited this time of year.
Time to moisten my sucker.
That's right.
Mm. Anyway,
live meat season.
That's about the extent of live bait talk I can go for.
Yeah,
anyway,
me too.
You know, that's it, Jay. Last week, I got to tell everybody, thank you so much. I got a ton of emails about my
structure rant.
I guess whatever you want to call it. I was in the zone. Get in the zone.
That was intense.
Auto zone. We're going to do some videos on that, guys, here very shortly, and check it out. The new video is out featuring Jay Bird on his freaking sand catting. So that's out.
Yeah, check the big fork sand cat dive rise jerk bait. That was day one fishing together with you.
Yeah.
You know, but that was the first time we fished together, No, that was the first day.
Mm-hmm.
So it started off with a bang. That was a good fish.
Good fish.
We took neighbor Steve out, mm-hmm. and his buddy was up. So we actually had 4 big dudes in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to know the combined weight.
It doesn't matter.
It didn't matter in the low, man. Just
rest in peace. Beautiful love.
Yeah.
But no, it's fun. Pour some out for your homies. But anyway, no, big thank you for everybody that, that sent a wonderful message. I got tons of messages about that Structure podcast. That will not be the end of the Structure, because we if we call that lesson one, there are some things we need to talk about. Getting a little more in depth.
Just the beginning. Yeah, I needed more personally.
2 hours is not enough, and I could go about five.
You told me seven on the phone before we started.
Yeah, pretty much, to be honest with you. I live and breathe it.
It looks like I need a pot of coffee for this one.
Anyway, we're going to get right into it here, and it's something I need to address anyway. Parker says, okay, for real, when are we going to see the Titans drop at the shop? So here's the deal.
The Titan.
I am going to tell you, folks, it is the year of supply chain issues. They will be there shortly. There's a lot of people waiting on that bait, myself included. They're going to show up here. They're going to show up soon. Jace, actually, you've caught fish on the things. They're bad to the bone. But if you look at it, there are like no new hard baits for a reason. It is a freaking blue miracle that we got them made. They will be there very soon. The second I know, like, an arrival date or anything, I'm going to let you guys know ahead of time. It was supposed to be...
I talked to Eric from Livingston Lures yesterday. Yeah. Right, I mean,
they're moving.
Yeah, they're getting done. They're
right. We're moving
sometime next month in November. So.
Well, and it's been a matter of whether it be... We were thinking September or August, and now it's the November. I mean, just, dude... You can't even buy a freaking microwave anymore, you know, or whatever going on. So, everybody's facing the same supply chain issues. The other thing I'll say is this, is there is an awesome, crazy, just bad to the bone shipment of shield rods on the way. A lot of guys have been asked about the 9-footers. Yep. Well, guess what else is coming? 9-6s, baby. So, I've been fishing. I have the only 2 9-6 shield rods on planet Earth. Facts.
And how did you obtain those? Legally or otherwise?
Through back channels, if you will.
Back channels.
Unky Jim, please. Jim, please. No, Jim hooked me up.
The Jim, what happened to that sample, that 9-6? I wanted to use it.
I saw a guy in a possum suit.
Yeah.
There's a very tall possum in the parking lot. Stealing shield rods. It was me. Anywho, I've got them. I love them. I promise you, they're killer. There's literally nothing lacking on the 9-6.
No. I threw it too. Yeah. I checked it out a little bit. Actually, I caught a fish on it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
What more do you want? So,
come to think of it, because my rod was... My gear was misplaced in Jim's garage on one trip, and Steve's like, don't worry, I've got rods in my boat.
Mm-hmm.
Here, use one of these.
Right.
So anyway, I did. Yeah. So bottom moral of the story is, you know what? This could happen the same week with the Titans and the 9-6 shield rods. And some other new telescoping models are coming in too. This is going to be an exciting month.
Well, we've got some stuff. We've set down with Tommy the Pallet King, who handles some rod stuff. He said, what do you need, Steve? Well, and I said, Tommy Pallet King, I'm humbled to talk to the Pallet King. B, what do I need? Well, we added some stuff for kayak anglers and shoreline anglers.
Mm-hmm.
More on that here very shortly. But
John boaters.
Well, and John boaters, we're thinking about the podcast. Is if you're a John boat and kayak and bank fisherman, which a lot of you are, we got some cool stuff up our sleeve. We thought it out. We went, what do you need to do this? So there's some really purpose driven stuff for kayak, shoreline, John boat. You don't need a 9'6" rod and a John boat. You know what I'm saying? So we've got some really kick ass rods coming that are purpose driven. One thing I'll say, the back grips are perfect. The front grips are perfect. We got the reel seat perfect. The trigger grip is the same trigger grip that you see on rods that are 5 times as much as this. So it's comfortable. It palms right. I love it. I couldn't be happier. You know, I'm Mr. Shield Rod Boy, but you know, the product is right and the things are right and it's purpose driven. where it's going to be like one of those things where you go, well, you know, they got, there's a rod for this and a rod for that and a rod for this. Well, we've got it in shield rods and it cost about nothing. So we're going to give you guys a big rundown on it here pretty soon. I'm not trying to sell you a rod. I'm just telling you, a lot of guys have been asking, when are you getting more nines? Well, nine sixes are coming, nine heavy telescoping, and some other exciting stuff will be here in a minute. The Titan will be here. I promise you, of anybody on planet Earth that wants them things done, it's me. Jay.
Yes, Steve.
This guy. I read this already. I won't lie because there's a picture attached, but I'm humbled by this. Otis Rose says, really helpful podcast. I learned so much from the latest podcast. I was already fishing the pond I'm on. It's not a pond, but I know where he's at. But I was always fishing and looking at context, but I wasn't considering slopes as structure, right? And so if we talk about the slope, what he's probably calling a slope is what we were talking about the other day, about steeper breaks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? The squigglies come together and all that stuff. You know, or considering they need to be a travel route. He said, I moved fish from the bank to 1417, yada, yada, yada. He said, I'm not much on deep water fishing. He said, I'm a Virginia resident, but I was born and raised a West Virginia creeker. Right? He goes on to say, he's fishing these transitions. He's paying attention to the podcast. He said, midday, 12:30, 1 o'clock. He's pretty much on this slope and fishing it as a transition area, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's fishing with a shield rod. Shameless plug. And he said, this edge, it's graduated. It's graduating from 17 to 26, and then we're adjacent to the 14s and the 7s. Kadoosh, 52-inch monster fishing structure.
Wow.
So, Otis, congratulations on a new PB. I've seen the pictures of it. It is a chota load, buddy. I'll stick it on the user section when I get an opportunity. But he says, thanks to Steve and Jay for the education on structure. I left some of that out because it's like, yeah. Let him figure
it. What kind of bait did he catch on? Did he volunteer that info?
A live otter. He had quick strike
rigged
otter.
I thought creakers that use shield rods only used live possum.
No, mainly squirrels this time of year. I'm teasing. Now, okay. He didn't say what he got it on.
I was just curious.
On a kitten. But it's a heck of a fish, man. Otis, I appreciate the email. I'm glad it helped a little bit, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Joseph, listen to the Structure Masterclass tonight and have questions about how much the seasonal migration of the forage play into the areas that are best for structure. Say I'm fishing on a non-Cisco based lake. Do I need to know where the perch and walleye are during that time of year? I'm targeting, you know, the time of year, the places I'm targeting to figure out what structure will hold fish at any given time. Say great info as always. Good luck this fall. He said, I'll hang up and listen now. Tell me what to do here. He's getting at this. So, obviously, there are places in a body of water that are going to have all the structural elements, right? They're going to have the highways. They're going to have the avenues, all the stuff you heard me talk about last week. They're going to have those elements, but they will be missing any life. Okay? Different times of the year, different places in the lake turn on. You always want to be near the refrigerator, right? And what do you mean by that? Muskies are not going to be far from the fridge. If there's no food, they're not going to be there. So, you know, we want these structural elements. We want these highways. We want these avenues. We want these alleys. But we also want forage present, okay? We sort of alluded to that. I know he said he's on a non-Cisco base, but man, sometimes structure can go out the window when we're talking about pelagic bait fish because muskies will just throw that out the door. Okay. So make sure there is life, you know, wherever you're going. Now, if I go into a place and I go, I'm seeing a lot of little arches on my fish finder and it's accompanied with structure, I'm going to know I'm in shape. If I'm checking something out and it's like a dead zone, might want to readdress and check out another section of the lake that has the right structural elements. It has the cover in place, but there's signs of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to just go, structure is good. Everything has to be good. Will says, hey, Steve. Hey, Jay. Say hello, Jay.
Hey, Will.
Hey, Will. Love the podcast, meow. said I'm a beginner muskie fisherman and have yet to catch my first muskie. I mainly fish in Vilas County once or twice a month. I listen to the podcast religiously and try to implement everything you talk about to finally connect with a cabbage dragon. Anyways, is there any advantage to fishing fast other than being able to cover water? You guys always talk about slowing down during certain conditions, and I'm not great at identifying those conditions and patterns. So is it just to be really slow all the times, regardless of weather or water temp, or could I be missing out a bite for being too slow? Okay. I love this. That's a great question.
Yeah.
So I'm going to break it down for you. You guys hear me all the time. Jay, I'm a broken record. Slow down. Go deeper. Deeper. Slower presentations means deeper. Yada, yada, yada. All this stuff. There is about 45 minutes in the morning and 45 minutes in the evening where speed is killer. Right? If I go out and I have a nice mid-humidity day, it's not great musky conditions, but I got some big puffy clouds. I got a little bit of chop and I got this going on. And it's just an average day. It's not a zero and it's not a 10. It's a 5. In the evening.
Average day. Exactly. Yeah. Most things are like that. Hence average, yeah.
We need to be slow. We're going to spend the majority of our time not fishing the shallows, but we're going to fish that first break. We're going to fish structure. We're going to fish it methodically and slow. But when it comes evening time, I'm going to move in, and I will break out the top water, and I will break out the bucktail.
Mm-hmm.
You guys always hear me barking like there's probably people out there go, this guy probably doesn't even own a bucktail. You know? There's a time and a place for everything. Probably the biggest takeaway from what we're always saying is don't get hung up on one singular thing, right? I was talking about it this week with a guy on the boat. And I said 99% of muskie anglers, right, are fishing for 5 to 10% of the fish with one methodology. That methodology does work. Topwater, bucktails, big speed, big vibration. That will work under prime conditions, and that will work usually under low light conditions. But there's a lot of daylight hours in between that. Okay, so don't be afraid to fish fast. I mean, you will see me moving and grooving. I'm notorious for, like, I will move a bucktail so slow it barely is moving, but you put me on topwater bait and that thing's scorching in.
Yeah, that's right? True. I've seen it.
And so it's not about one thing. What I'm always harping on about the slow down. It's not a singularity, because that's just as dangerous as doing the other. Okay? Fishing fast is easy. Fishing with finesse, fishing with intent is difficult. So I'm always hammering on finesse and intent. But when that sun gets behind the trees and the shadows get really long, don't be afraid to put some speed on them.
Yeah, like you were saying, you know, there's a low light conditions, and that's a very limited amount of time in any given day. Like you said, it's probably 45 minutes, you know, in the front and the back of the day, and then in between there. If it's an average day, you're going to have to just go out a little bit deeper, like you said, first break, slow down, find where the bait is, and that's what's going to work for you.
That's the thing.
On any average day, you know, it's just like, you know, like I think we were talking about that last week. Yeah. It's just like, how many days in a week
are good?
Do you have are really none. Good? That must be that beautiful. Yeah, you know.
I had
throughout
that.
The entire day. Yeah, you know, maybe a half day once a week like that. There's definitely warm front coming in or whatever, low hanging clouds.
I had a day
south wind. Yeah. You know, humidity.
I had a day last week. You guys have probably seen her on the Muskie Shop TV, Mary Glenn, a buddy of mine, a client of mine. We went out, and it was perfect. And we caught a giant. And it was a four-hour day. Like, had we not caught a fish, it was my fault. There's a lot.
You told her, didn't you say to me that night or something? You told her, it's just like, if we don't catch a good one today, I'm an idiot or something like that.
Yeah, it was so.
we're gonna get a good one. Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, it was a 10. It didn't take a genius to figure it out. You went, if you are anywhere near a fish, it will be active. We went out. We had friggin' 9 up in the first hour. It was perfection. Mm-hmm. It was what you dream of. You never see that. It's so rare. You know, you get the low-hanging clouds and the high humidity and just this storm that never really materializes. But it's like, it's just this perpetual droning on of prefrontal, just nasty. It was wonderful. That rarely happens. A lot of times you'll go, all right, we've got sun up. And this is a typical summer day. You know, you got your sun up, and this is a 15-hour day, and who wants to be out there for 15 hours? But you got sun up, and then after that, it's downhill until maybe 3 o'clock. There's this thunderstorm coming, and here comes a thunderstorm rolling across the place, and now you're about to get blown off there.
Yeah, and you got maybe 5 minutes of fishing.
Right.
A, you just determine that there's a storm coming.
Right.
B, you got a couple minutes before the wind gets so bad. And
or there's lightning.
If there's lightning in the area, I mean, I've been on the water with people before, and it's like all of a sudden you look and your line starts to float a little bit.
Yeah.
It hover. You can almost hear it humming. It's like time to go.
Oh, there was there in Wisconsin, there was a day I was sitting in the boat with Jim going, hurry up, Jay, hurry up, Jay. I mean, there's lightning cracking.
Yes.
Near us, and we're sitting in this boat, and I'm like, get the freaking trailer down the hill, back it. I don't care if it's jackknifed. I just want to be off the water.
That was the day with Fabulous Freddy, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was. And
we got three fish. 2 hours or 3 hours, and we got blown off.
It was dicey.
Yeah,
you're going, cool. It's coming. So, you know, those perfect days don't exist, but average days. So if I'm looking at an average day, sunup's going to be productive. Sundown's going to be productive, right? Something that is often overlooked is the midday peak in temperature. So let's say it's a June day or July day or sometime in the summer months or even fall. Wherever the temperature is going to spike at its absolute highest, there's often a shallow water bright or a shallow in the water column bite. But the rest is going to be cruddy. I would rather be really good at the majority of the time I spend on the water.
Yes, right.
Okay.
Right.
So I don't want to be really good at what happens for 45 and 45 is an hour and a half, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. Somewhere in that neighborhood. I'm not great math, but I think it's an hour and a half. So if I got 15 hours and an hour and a half of it correspond to what I'm good at, that's rough. But I'd rather be proficient at all 15 hours of daylight. That's what I'm always hammering on for you. If there's any takeaway, is be good all day long. There's no trash time. Right? For example, this week, something that could be said. I look at the guys and go, are you ready to be bored? Yeah. Everybody put on a Bondi jig. Let's do this. 2 hours of Bondi turned into two fish. Was it exciting? No. Is catching muskies fun? Every time. Right? So, you know, you're going, all right, they slid down the hill. We got to do this. They're off the break. How do we get down to them? Okay. So, you know, the day started with shallow water presentations, and then it turned into Bondi jigging in the middle of the day, and then we moved it back up shallow and fishing moderate pace with blades and cranks in the evening. So don't get hung up, and I've found myself doing this, where I will fish finesse way too much, and sometimes I overlook power fishing bites. So do it all well. That's all of our goal. When I want to be good from sun up to sundown and sometime after sundown, but that's a whole other subject, but be proficient in all aspects. That's the goal here. Hope that makes sense. Greg tried right-handed and left-handed reels and cast right and left-handed, but still more confidence with the rod in my dominant hand, as you should be. What are some good left-handed reels for all around fishing? Switch to big rubber, et cetera. Thanks. Okay. So with that being said, I definitely advocate that you should have the rod in your dominant hand, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm backwards, and I wish it wasn't. So I'm left-hand dominant, but I reel with my left hand. That is just from years of that's what you did. right? If you are right-handed, theoretically, in a perfect world, you would have a left-handed reel, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm comfortable casting with my left hand and not switching the rod. I reel in with my right.
But you're right-handed.
Orbit casting, so.
But you're right-handed, though. So it's harder. Your left hand is not as wired in, right, to the hemispheres of your brain or however you want to, however that is. You have to teach your non-dominant hand to do things, opposed to it would be quicker. Okay, I need to work a lentium. I need to work a hell hand. It's easier in your dominant hand. So I've gotten myself to the point I can fish both hands, right? But I've done it for so long where the rod's in my right and I'm reeling left-handed, it's sort of a waste because my left hand is just way easier to manipulate than my right. So if you're starting, you're new to the game, have the rod, the thing that is articulating the movement of the bait, more so than anything, in your dominant hand because it's easier to get good retrieves, right? Easier to set the hook. You got more power in your dominant hand. So have that rod in your dominant hand, you're going to be in better shape. As far as better reels, ask me that 10 years ago, and I said, well, you got one option. It's a Boo Garcia C36501. Now it's fair game, wouldn't you say, Jay?
Yeah, I'm using those Daiwa Pro-Rex, those black and purple ones, TWSs.
However, he's asking about left-handed.
I'm loving those things.
Yeah, but he's asking about a left-handed
one.
It's the same thing. There's no difference. I don't think there's really many manufacturers that make a mass production reel where they don't make a left-handed option. So you don't really have.
Well, there's not many available though. The availability is the tough thing. But
you got to compete with me. I got piles of them, baby. So, but
yeah, I mean, it boils down to you go with, like Steve said, try that. If it's absolutely not comfortable and you're more comfortable the other way, then get, you know, get used to and practice with what's most comfortable for you. And you got to figure it out for yourself because like I said, I'm kind of ambidextrous, you know, but I am comfortable casting with my left hand. Like I said, not switching hands. A lot of people, for some reason, they cast with one hand and then they switch the rod over to the other. That's like the accepted thing. I don't get that. I don't do that. I don't switch hands with it.
I do not switch either.
It's one fluid motion.
And so preferably get the rod in your dominant hand and turn the reel with your bad hand, if you will, your non-dominant hand, your dummy hand. Because turning the handle is easy. But again, to his question, what are good left-handed reels that are the same as right-handers? I would say they probably make, 15 or 20% as many left-handed reels as they do righties. Jim at Muskie Shop was awesome, and he'll usually send me a weird lefty on occasion and hook me up with the Revo Toro Beast, right? The low profile
I got one of those. I like it.
Right. But they make a lefty and it's exactly the same. It's just flipped. So as far as other left-handed reels that I own, I don't think there's one that's esoteric where it's not in a right-handed model, but you know, it's the same as everything else.
I don't think you have one of those Pro-Rexes. Me and Jim have been using it. I like it a lot. So it's not for everybody. It's got a really big single paddle hand or power handle on it.
All right.
And I didn't know if I'd like it, but I'm completely used to it. It's extremely comfortable. I love it.
All right, AJ says, my boat already has two rod holders, but I'd like to have one more so I can run a bait in my prop wash. I have two of the Down East double clamp on rod holders that my grandpa used for sauger fishing. I was thinking about clamping one more on the transom of my boat, run straight out of the back, but I'm concerned that it may not hold up to hooking a big muskie at 2 to 4 miles an hour. Any advice on Down East? Buddy, I'll tell you what, these things are going to break.
They're metal.
They're like galvanized.
Awesome.
Yeah. They're going to hold up. I'm a Fulby man. Jay?
Yeah, me too.
I'm a Fulby man. I like Fulbys just because they don't have the rod wear, right? So the Down East, that metal on cork or EVA foam can get nasty. That'd be my only takeaway from there, but you don't have to worry about those things breaking. I mean, it's like fencing. It's like whatever they make fences out of, like galvanized steel stuff. Those are tough as nails. You got no problems there. Ras, the boss, says, I normally put braid straight on the spool my reel and tape it down. I bought Beast Braid not realizing that they are 125-yard spools. What kind of backing would you use? What test and what knots do you tie the two together? Okay, so he bought some Beast Braid. Didn't realize it's not that big of a spool and he wants to get some more use out of it. Yeah. I always put backing on. I don't know if I... Is that old school?
No. Okay. No, backing's a good thing. You get a nice, even level.
Yeah. The spools are too...
Monofilament works great. 20-pound mono.
Dude, I was just going to say 10, 20... Well, I've never...
10's hard to tie to. It's not as grabby as 20. You know, it's a little bit better diameter to tie to.
If you got a fish down to the backing, you're in trouble, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, but I always feel better there because mono will dig into itself much quicker than braid will. Like you just said, I think 20. I've tried 30 before just because it's laying around the house and it's a little bit much. But, yeah, 20-pound mono, I don't think it matters. You could get, you know, you guys sell some walleye-grade lines and bass-style lines. But, you know, I personally, it'll be the cheapest monofilament I could find. And just fill that spool. Now, when I'm doing mono on a spool, I still tape over that before I reel it up to make backing out of it. Do you do that when you guys are spooling reels at the shop, Jay?
Do you tape it when, though?
Like, so I make a knot to the spool with a monofilament, right?
Yeah.
And then I put electrical tape over top of the monofilament knot, and then I reel the monofilament on. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so, you can do that. Yeah. If it's a good secure, really snug, you know, like you cinch it down really good, it's not going to slip. It never does once you start piling mono over there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if you got a half inch
maybe
of
it's
electrical
overkill,
tape laying around, throw it on there. It certainly won't hurt.
And I'll tell you, he's asking about knots, but my rule on knots for backing is if you don't know a good knot, tie a lot is what I've usually done. It's just ugly. Mm-hmm. What is when you guys are spooling something at the store, what is the knot you guys use for backing and then joining the two together?
I use a blood knot. I mean, I think everyone uses some kind of variation of a line to line knot, like a blood knot. They're pretty easy to tie and they never slip. You can check it. You know what I mean? Once you put it on there, don't use light gauge mono though. I'd stick with that 20-pound diameter. Or, you know, if you got Dacron, let's say you got old Dacron. I mean, back in the day, you know, it was always like Cortland's Micron or Musky Master. You know, you put a little bit of that on there, and then you tied your main line over that. So. But that's not around anymore. Mono actually grips better, I think, than any kind of Dacron did.
There you go.
Dacron's like a super line without the super.
Right, right. I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with whatever knot as long as it's secure and it's going to hold. And if you're fighting one down to the back end, you're in trouble anyway. So just get it snugged up there.
If I'm using a high diameter main line, or spooling somebody for that, I always put at least a little bit of backing on there. It's just, you have to.
I'll say this though, like there's so much line waste. Like if you spool a full like Tranx 400 up, there's a lot of line that's never going to even see the water.
Yeah, when you switch that line, you'll notice the color and the appearance
it's like
of the
fresh line.
It's completely different than the first half.
Yeah. Which is a little trick from guiding years back. Once it starts going bad, you can always reverse it. You know? And you got fresh line on top. Yeah. You know, it's not the preferred way, but if you're on a tight budget, and I've been there, don't be afraid to pull that stuff off and just tie to the old section. And it got new line on top of it. All right, I will say this. I did that with trolling reels forever, dude. You know, just like smack some more line on there. Jack, do you guys ever tune your Warlocks to make it dive a little? Absolutely.
Yeah.
We actually have a video. We got the
too.
Huh? Hey?
Suix, too.
Suix, well, he's asked about Warlocks.
Mom's saying they both got a metal tail, and they're very tunable.
They're very tunable.
They do some funky things with those babies.
There is actually a video from the Muskie Shop. We caught a couple nice fish on Morlocks, and I talk about tuning the tail on there. Check it out. It's on the YouTube. But the cool thing, if you like bend that tail up, it's going to run deeper, which is interesting because what is difficult with glide baits is running a deep and fast presentation. Right. Usually you have to put a bunch of weight in there to get it down, but with a Warlock, you bend the tail up where it's sort of swooping upwards, it's going to drive that bait down. So you can actually work that thing really quick with good hang time and a flutter to it by bending the tail. My Warlocks, I think I have 6 or 7 of those things. And there's a couple of them where they are like, they do one thing and I leave them alone because I figured out like at this angle, this thing's running at 6 or 7 feet. After a hang time to it, I leave them alone. It's sort of like having a good suic, you know, and that's the nature of the beast with suics. That's why the Titan's going to be so cool, is you don't have to tune it. But, you know, if you get a suic or a Warlock dialed in, leave it alone. You know, don't play with it. You go, that's perfect, right? Leave it be. Yeah. And have it purpose-driven. Pat says, loving the podcast. First, I think we should take a quick moment of silence for the death of your boat. Everyone, 10 seconds of silence. Okay, I can't wait 10 seconds, but thank you.
I can't either.
He said, that thing was a thing of beauty, and I enjoyed fishing on it with you guys. He said, this past weekend I was fishing in post-frontal and mid-cold front conditions, fishing shallower bays and been producing for me recently. He said, with the condition, I was throwing a slammer, working it in a hybrid fashion, but no luck. Went to a bulldog and had action on it with them only grabbing the tail. The next day, went to a Medusa, and once again, they were tail grabbing. I've tried red October tubes several other times and had no luck with them. What other presentation could I consider in this situation? All right. The old classic tail grabbers on the Medusas, on the bulldogs. That's when I go to, and I'm assuming we're throwing mag dogs and standard Medusas. That's why you always have your spring dogs, your medium dogs, and your micro Medusas, and all the above, right? So, you know, if they're hitting a standard Medusa in their tail grabbing, go down a size. It's the same.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And I said spring dogs. I guess the spring dogs are like little tiny ones. But like, what's the step down from mag where the ones are like
the regular dog.
The regular dog, which nobody ever pays attention to anymore. Regular dog.
Mid Medusa, you know, go down a step to the mid size. You know,
right.
It's considerably shorter and a little bit lighter. It's easier to throw and retrieve, and you might get more bites that way. I mean, hookups.
Yep. And so step it down a clip, and that will usually do that for you. Because a lot of times if they're on those presentations, because like he said he went to a tube, but a tube is not a deuce or a bulldog. You need that downsize to get that body shot where there's a hookup. It's tough when they're tail grabbing on those things, but a lot of times they're just, it's almost like them nipping a bucktail that's too big.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Michael says, what's the fall rate on an alpha dog? I'm debating between purchasing some Magnum Alphas or shallow pounders. What do you think? I know the Alpha will be easier to throw, but I'm most interested in working them across the tops of weeds. Okay, well, that answers my question right there.
Okay.
If I'm working weeds, all right, and it's a shallow weed top, I want shallow dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather have the shallow pounder at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say, this is, don't hold my feet to the fire. I would say a alpha dog is falls the same as a mag dog, which is foot a second, if not quicker.
To answer his question, I think the alpha dogs maybe have a little bit less, a little bit more hang time, a little bit slower.
Well, because of the size of the tail, yeah.
Because it's got more tail, it's got a little bit more body to it. So, maybe halfway to a shallow presentation or
not
or whatever, but
quicker than
I you're still, you know, like, yeah, like you're you're getting to it. So like, go with a shallow Medusa, shallow bulldog,
and that is
above the tops. Yeah,
I'm going to tell
you
that's
what they're
made for. Not a lot of people get into the shallow bulldogs and the shallow Medusas, right? They're like, meh. You know, if I'm going to work this, I want to fall in fast. Those things just pull and stop. And actually, we filmed an episode of the show with a really nice fish on this. We haven't aired it yet. Is working those over top weed tops and pausing it, man. In that slower fall time, they will come out of those weeds and just smack it. What I like about a shallow bulldog or a shallow Medusa, if let's say I'm working 4 foot, the tops are 4 feet down, right, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
Not a problem. Rip, stop, rip, stop. I'm good. But let's say they're 6 feet down, but I don't want the speed that it would take. It's just a little added weight. You can tweak those shallow bulldogs so he's hitting the weed tops, but we're not getting buried in it and getting fouled up. I really like the shallow dog for the tweakable pattern that is. You know, it's a good platform to sort of add just a little bit. Add just a little bit to it's doing exactly what you want it to do, opposed to having to work something too fast to keep it from fouling.
It's amazing because those shallow versions of both brands, Chaos Tackle mm-hmm. and Musky Innovations, you're just talking about Bulldogs and Medusas. It's like the heavy versions outsell the shallow versions like 50-1.
Yeah, easy.
It's crazy. And especially in the fall. That's a time where you want to slow down your presentation in general. Mm-hmm. And it's a fantastic presentation. More people use the shallow ones in the fall, and they're getting those big, like, you know, the big, it's not the biggest, but it's a huge bait. It's the husky size Medusa, yep. which is actually bigger than a Magnum Bulldog,
right?
A little bit bigger in the shallow version. That's a great presentation,
yeah. And
for this time of the year, when the water temps cool down, fish are slower metabolism,
right? They're metabolism, exactly. They're moving slower, so we
don't want to be ripping 100 miles an hour.
And you get into heavy baits. Now, for me, like, and I'm sitting here looking at a couple hanging up, like, straight up pounders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Deadly for deep weed edges in the summer.
Yeah.
Right? But you throw that thing up shallow, you know what's going to happen. Blah. It's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
But those shallow, like you said, the shallow Medusa, the shallow pounder, dude, you give me 5 foot tops, 4 foot tops, you're going to make something happen. Those fish are going to feel that thing. They're going to see it. It's a big target. And allowing yourself to have the hang time, the pull, pause, is pretty nasty because as that thing's paused and it's falling slowly, they're undulating.
Right over those rock bars mm-hmm. in the fall.
Ooh. Right. Just so you have something going on there. It gives the fish a lot more time to look at that thing. And I've gotten hammered big time on those. Again, like you just said, there's a small club of guys that sort of figured that out, but everybody else is throwing, you know, mega monster Medusas and pounders and 2 pounders in the fall, and they have to work them fast. Big bait, slow presentation in cold water is going to be deadly. You know, and it's funny. You know, back in the day, my goodness, before they even had shallow dogs, there were people, we were cutting those things in a half and pulling the lead out of them. You know, and then they finally started making the shallow dogs. Don't be afraid of that. And then, like I said, with it, if you've got a slightly deeper weed edge, you know, I really like 4, I like 5, but let's say it's 6 to 8 and you have a cold front, you've got bad conditions. Adding just a they make like the Chaos Deep Threat weights, Jay, that go mm-hmm. on the front hook hangers, or even bell sinkers or anything. You can tweak that bait out a little bit to get it down where you need to be. So when it's ripped, it's down there, but it slows that fall. Don't be afraid to tweak a shallow dog out a little bit to get it to do exactly what you want it to do.
Yeah, it's a little more versatile if you get a shallow dog, a big one. Or mm-hmm. a shallow Medusa, and you get some dipsy sinkers that you could
mm-hmm.
say just split ring on to the, you know, get some half ounce dipsies, and they got the little brass rings.
Yep.
Put a split ring on there, have it ready to go, put it at the front hook mm-hmm. hanger. Boom. You just modified it there in 15 seconds.
Right.
You know, if you want to work it 5 feet deeper.
Right.
That's a good program to stick with this fall.
Right. And I know some guys. I got a buddy named Josh, and we talked about this, where he doesn't even buy regular dogs anymore. He buys shallow and modifies from there, which is an interesting concept. He told me that this summer, and I almost was like, damn, that's a good idea.
You can always add, but you can't take away.
Right. Again, when we were taking the lead out of these things, you had to take a friggin' box cutter and cut the head open on a bait. And
that's just stupid.
Oh, no, dude, I've done it. I still know how to do it, where you go, I'm going to take this brand new bait, and I'm going to cut it up, together. And I'm going to melt it back together and hope it's straight. But I got the lead out of it. You know? And you go, thank God they started making shallow ones. But, you know, you've got this bait where you go, man, if I want to add 2 ounces to that shallow dog, I can get it to do some stuff. So that's an interesting concept. If you're on a limited budget of, I would almost go, if I could buy 1 or 2 bulldogs, I might just buy 2 shallow dogs and lead's cheap. You know, I mean, you can add, it, like you said, it's easier to add than take away. So, you know, most of the weight in those things are head forward anyway. So putting it off the front hook hanger, you can get that versatility there. Again, you hear a lot of people talk about, like, we're just talking about the standard regular bulldog. I love those in shallow. Like in the spring. Yeah,
don't forget those red October tubes too, man. Those things are amazing.
Yeah, different animal though.
Yeah.
That's a fast presentation. We're talking that hang time and the suspension.
Shallow versions that kick to the side really good.
You know, you can get them to do some stuff, but give those a look. But anyway, folks, it's a long week. Big, hopefully next week, big update on some boating equipment, Jay. We're hoping. Fingers crossed. But anyway, make sure go listen to the Structure podcast again. We just took the easy way out on the user Q&A here. But anyway, Jay, we're gonna do another big master class next week, folks. We got like 5 different topics people are asking on, whether it be trolling again or structure a little deeper in that. So we're gonna figure out what makes the most sense. But folks, anyway, gonna call her a night there, LD Jerry Bird.
Sounds good, Steve.
All right, say
good night,
Jay.
Good talking with you.
Good night, G.
Good night, Steve.